Good evening, everyone. This is Goth Nerd Revelations with me, your host, the Goth Nerd. And tonight, I wanted to talk about something that I had recently just had a conversation with about several friends of mine. And it's what certain characters mean to certain people. For example, one of the things that came out of a conversation I'd had earlier today was the conversation had come up about certain things that say certain superhero characters would do. In the primary example being Peter Parker, Spider-Man, there was a story in which Peter Parker had taken a serum that was developed by Kurt Connors, the one who became the Lizard, and what happened was he did it in order to try and take away his spider powers and be like a quote unquote normal person, but instead what it ended up doing is it ended up pretty much increasing mutation. You know, this is when Peter Parker got several arms and then eventually became a little bit more spider-like. The question was asked, why would Peter Parker want his powers taken away when they can do such tremendous good? But here's the thing. Peter Parker and many people, I think, who come from this walk of life can identify with Peter Parker in this regard. Peter Parker was supposed to be the awkward teenage kid, the kid who wasn't the popular kid. He was the school nerd. He excelled in science. He was not a sports nut. Something that kids like myself, and most of the people who were reading Spider-Man could relate to. Now I'm not saying everyone, there are many, other people from different walks of life who like Spider-Man, but this was sort of the main core group that, he was a part. At least that's the interpretation I have from all the years of Spider-Man that I've read. Once again, I can't speak for everybody. But because of this, the whole thing is that he was picked on his entire life. He had to deal with school bullies, the same as the rest of us did. And one of the things you really got to ask yourself at the end of the day is, if you could take away all that pain that you had suffered at the hands of the school bullies, I personally think that you would do that. You would. A lot of people would say, oh, no, I like the person I am, blah, blah, blah. And while that may be true to an extent, if you had a chance to erase that pain away, you would take that pain away. And this is why my answer to why a lot of people will say, well, why would Peter Parker wanted his spider powers taken away? It's so he could have a normal life. He wanted a normal life. The fact of the matter is, not only was he the nerdy kid who got picked on, but also the fact of the matter is, his superheroing stuff. And this is what happens with a lot of superheroes. It was affecting his personal life. And as I said, Peter Parker just wanted to have a quote unquote normal life. And so this would be a reason why he would want to have those powers taken away. Because of the fact that they had in some ways become a burden to him. Yes, it was great that he was rescuing and saving all these people, but it came at a cost. And the cost was that he himself, for the most part, could not experience happiness, because it seemed that with every person he would save, it would come at a cost to his own personal life. You know, and so, you know, knowing this, this would be a reason why he would really actually consider, you know, why he would really actually consider going and doing that. You know, so,
that I think that's a viable reason as to why Spider-Man would not want to be Spider-Man anymore, why he wanted to be just Peter Parker. But this has happened in many comic book stories. One could call it a trope these days, but yeah, it has happened in many different stories. It even had it. There was an X-Men story, I for the life of me, I can't remember the name of it, but it was during the Chris Claremont run, and what had happened was, there was this, and they actually had used this, plot point in some of the X-Men movies that Fox had done. But what had happened was that there was this person who had come up with this quote-unquote cure for mutants, which could make them, human beings again, make them normal. And a lot of people were considering taking this. And one of the people who was considering doing this was Rogue, because she didn't like the fact that whenever she came in contact with somebody, it was, it was at a cost, because whenever she would touch somebody, she would absorb their powers, but then if she touched them too long, she would start absorbing their life essence. So it was hard for her to have relationships. And so she was considering this. Anyway, it turns out that, this was all a plot by Apocalypse, and the fact of the matter was that there was actually no cure at all. What had happened was that Apocalypse wanted to find the most powerful mutants he could, so that they could become part of his Horsemen of the Apocalypse. And in fact, one of the people that he did end up making, one of the people he did end up making, putting into this, was Angel. Because Angel, or Warring Worthen Thing the Third, many people may know him from different, but Angel's what he was, from the X-Men and X-Factor, he got suckered in, but what ended up happening was, the stuff that they put in basically turned them into like darker, more evil versions of themselves. And then Angel ended up becoming the character Archangel. Actually, there's a story later, even further than that, like when I talked about in my episode where I talked about the 90s. When Wolverine had his adamantium stripped off of him and he became more beast-like and feral, later on, he was recruited as one of Apocalypse's horsemen. And he, Apocalypse rebonded the adamantium to Wolverine's skeleton. But either way, this is what it was. I think it actually might have been the Fall of the Mutants storyline. Yeah, I think that's what it was. I think it was the Fall of the Mutants storyline. Really great one, and it was during the time when Mark Silvestri was doing the art on this thing. An amazing run, an amazing run. But then again, I'm biased, but anything that Chris Claremont has done for the X-Men has been awesome. There's no other person who's done the X-Men who has done as good a job as Chris Claremont, in my opinion.
I just think that Chris Claremont, you know, is he's just the perfect guy who knows how the X-Men work, and he just knows how to tell great stories with these characters. But it's the same kind of thing when Rogue was wanting to go and get this quote unquote cure. It was the same thing. These were people who had been ostracized and picked on and just looked at as less than human for their entire lives. As they were looked at as freaks. And I'm telling you, anybody would, if they had a shot at not being treated like that, they would very heavily consider it. So, I mean, before anybody goes on, you know, prejudgments or whatnot, I mean, that's really the truth. That really is the truth. You know, anybody would think twice about it. It's just, it is one of those things. Now, would they ultimately choose it? That's debatable. Anybody would heavily consider that. Anybody. Especially if you have someone, or if you are someone who's been ostracized your entire life, it's just an inevitability. You will heavily consider that. But that's the whole thing. You can look at it with so many different superhero characters. There's so many of them, and you really look at it. The fact there's a lot of superheroes, and a lot of it goes back to this, because a lot of the creators of superheroes were people like this. They were people who were very artsy people, but they were always usually, you know, they were the picked on kids. They were the nerds, you know, for lack of a better term. But they were the nerdy kids, and the whole point is that, you know, superheroes in a way is some dream fulfillment in that category. What you have is an idealized version of, what maybe the author would like to be like, or is their version of what, of what the greatest among us would be like. And what are they essentially fighting against? They're fighting against people that treat others as servants, as as ants to be stepped on. You pick the cliche, but the fact of the matter is that but they're always fighting. Basically, it's victim versus bully, you know. And in this case, it's the victim getting giving the bully their just desserts, you know. That's really what it comes down to in a lot of these stories. There's a lot of allegory in there about that, you know. It really is about taking the cruel person and, as I said, giving them their just desserts. You love these kind of things. It's another reason, actually, why I like a lot of horror comics, because horror comics have a lot of allegory in there like that, especially if you read the old EC stuff, you know. It's got a lot of stuff like that in there when you read things like Tales from the Crypt, Vault of Horror, Haunt of Fear, even Chalk Suspense stories. They even had it in their science fiction stuff, like Weird Science. But EC had a lot of these allegorical kind of tales like that, where you would have this horrible person within the pages of this story, and they would just throughout the entirety of this whole thing, they would just be these really awful, horrible people. And pretty much you were like, as you were reading through these pages, you were hoping something bad happened to them just because of the horrid assholes that these people were. And
And then what would happen is, yeah, either by some supernatural thing or just something else. But something horrible would end up happening to these people in the end. And you were actually cheering for it because of the fact that, as I said, you would see that these were horrible people, because you would see that within the first little bit of the story. These were people that deserved what they got. You know, it's not exactly as if, oh my gosh, it's a misunderstanding. No, these were horrible people doing horrible things, and you were happy to see them get their just desserts in the end. Like I said, I think a lot of superhero stuff can be very allegorical like that. But I said, not even just superhero stuff, because there's so many other ones in there. Because like I said, I just pointed out Tales from the Crypt can do that, but there's even other horror stories that do that as well.
Especially when you strip it down to its core, that's what a lot of comic books can provide for a lot of people, is they are a release. In this case, it helps you to deal with and let go of a lot of your demons. I know it's definitely helped me in that way. I had a lot of depression in my teenage years. I was horribly picked on. I've talked about this before. I've talked about this before, and I don't want to become a downer here. But anyway, there were a lot of horrid things that happened to me in my teenage years that made me a depressed person. And one of the great things I like about with comic books, and it definitely, like I said, it helped me out in my early teenage years, and then when I got back into it again in my late 20s, it was also another thing that helped me deal with these things. So you have so many characters like that. If you look at there are so many of these, like, you know, people rising against their oppressors, the people that are holding them down. You read into the pages of Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman, is a great allegory for women who are oppressed by a patriarchal society. When William Martin Marston created Wonder Woman, he was a person, and he actually believed this, whether you believe it or not, but the whole thing is he actually believed this, was he believed that women were the future. He believed that, if men would simply let go of their egos and let women lead, we would actually be in a better place. You read into the pages of Wonder Woman, and this is sort of a great dream comic, not only just for women, but for anybody who feels like they've been oppressed by somebody, feels like that power has been taken away from them. Wonder Woman is a really great comic book that embodies empowerment. Is an allegory for letting people know that you're never completely alone. You're never completely helpless. That each of us has a strength inside of us that we. That we either don't acknowledge or don't know that we have. But either way, you basically have the whole thing, there are many villains in the Wonder Woman canon, that will underestimate her because they think, oh, well, she's just a woman, so she can't, you know, she can't defeat me. And then she proves them wrong, showing, in fact, how strong she actually is. But like I said, it's still another allegorical thing, because basically you have the oppressors, the people that underestimate her and think that she's just this overly emotional female that can't stand up to them, and she proves them wrong. But once again, it's that whole the villains getting their just desserts, you know, the people getting what they deserve, because they are indeed just being a bunch of assholes, you know. But like I said, it's just, you have that in so many places. It even goes back to old mythological stories when we look at it as well. You even have, say, the story of Perseus. Even though technically you have the interference of Zeus, and Perseus was kind of favored by Zeus, but the whole thing is that many of the other gods, were always trying to plot against Perseus, and didn't want him to succeed, and Perseus basically, throughout all of his tales, would constantly prove people wrong as to their estimation of him. They thought the only reason he could win was because of his favor with Zeus. But he constantly did prove that he had the wits, the strength of character, and his own skills that he had learned on his own to be able to persevere and in the end, in the end, attain a victory. He proved that it wasn't, that he wasn't just favored by the gods, he could legitimately, actually make a difference and actually do something on his own merits. Now, yes, he did accept help from the gods when it was offered. I mean, the fact of the matter is that's kind of true to life as well. If somebody offers help, there's nothing wrong with accepting it. There could be the debate, well, if it comes with strings attached, but my point is if someone genuinely offers you help, I'm not saying help with strings attached, I'm just saying if someone genuinely offers you help, there's nothing wrong with accepting it. So what I would say is that, as I said, that's kind of a true to life thing. And, but once again, with the Perseus story, yes, he did get help from the gods. But the fact of the matter is, what he constantly proves is that regardless of whether he's getting help or not, he earns each victory. He earns each victory. You know, he's not just this kid who's coasting by on the help of others. He genuinely deserves every bit of help he gets, and as I said, earns every victory on his own merits because of his own virtues that he has. Every one of them, you even look at characters like Captain America. Captain America is kind of a similar story with Spider-Man. Not that he was a nerdy kid, but he was the son of immigrants. He wasn't like a big he wasn't like a big, strong, tough guy. He goes in the military, takes an experimental serum, which basically turns him into a manly beefcake. But through his own, through his own morality, he's actually able to carve himself out into a hero. Yes, the serum enhanced his skills, but here's the whole thing. Captain America is actually not superhuman. Is what a lot of people seem to forget. Captain America is not superhuman. He doesn't have powers. He doesn't have any superpowers. He's what you would call peak human. Every one of his abilities have been enhanced from what they were, but remember, he was like an 80-pound weakling. But basically, think of a person who, say, works out all the time, is in great physical shape, and maybe can do these great gymnastic-like things. But that's something everyone is capable of. As I said, he's not a superhuman, he's what you would call peak human. But despite all that, the whole thing is that Captain America is a hero by virtue of his moral center, his core. He's a person that protects others regardless of their background. If he finds something that he considers to be evil, he confronts it. He has a strong moral center. But this comes from the people who created him, because he was created by Jack Kirby and Joe Simon. He was created as a character in World War II. There were a lot of characters in World War II that they created that were these, like, patriotic-type characters that would go in and, take on the Nazis and stuff. In this case, that's what they were doing with him. He was supposed to, his entire costume is a freaking flag. And one of the great things that they have done with Captain America over the years, with the various creators who have taken him on, is they found ways to keep him relevant. Because the funny thing is, he was just created as a character, strictly who was basically supposed to be like, the American, it was overt in how he was supposed to be this patriarch character, because, you've got, the very first issue of Captain America, and he's decking Hitler in the face, but what happened was, after World War II ended, they actually ended the character for a bit, it was when they, years and years later, when they rebranded as Marvel in the early 60s, Jack Kirby was one of the people who'd come back to help out Stan Lee, and they had decided to resurrect Captain America, not only in his own title, but then as a member of the Avengers. And what they did to keep him relevant was they basically had it to where he got frozen in this block of ice for about 20 years. And when he came back, he was this man out of time. He didn't understand modern sensibilities because he was a man out of the 1940s. And this was now the 1960s, and there was a different set of values by then. And basically what you have is this kind of fish out of water story, but it ended up working and it ended up keeping Captain America relevant through the years. But there's just ways to keep a character relevant, even if they were made primarily for one purpose. And that is the truth. Captain America was primarily made as a way to basically get people, backing the soldiers, backing the U.S., and,
because as I said, you know, it was over in the first one, but either way, but they still kept him relevant, and they still kept that, and then he's a man who, as I said, throughout the years, no matter how things change over the years, he stays true to his own moral center. This is one of the great things I like about Captain America as a character, is he stays true to his moral center. Captain America has a moral center very similar to Superman. And Superman's one of those characters as well. One of those characters that, when he was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, and this was another kind of, just as I go with the allegory with the bully victim thing. What a lot of people don't know, and I have said this in several episodes, please check out my episodes where I discuss more Superman stuff in depth. I have talked about this before, but when Superman was created, Jerry Siegel, who was the writer, his father was actually a victim of violent crime. His father had been shot by a burglar. And what had happened was Jerry Siegel felt like his father never got justice because they never caught the person who killed his father. What happened was Superman was his way of basically saying, if I had had the power to save my father, what would I have done? And Superman was his answer to that, you know. Superman was his answer to why, is his wish fulfillment. Is basically, Superman is what he would have done had he had superpowers. But one of the things that they have done over the years, because, is Superman has had this strong moral center, and has especially become more prevalent in a lot of the more modern years as well. One of the great things about the Superman character, even if you look at him today, because he was actually quite simple in the Golden Years. You definitely check out my episodes where I talk about the Golden Years, because the characters were quite different than what they are today. But as the character evolved over the years, and even Jerry Siegel had actually stayed with the character throughout the 40s and even into the 50s, as he grew, his moral center became more apparent. And what you had is that kind of middle America, salt of the earth morality. And is basically, he had a clear definition of what right and wrong was. And you could clearly see that in those issues. But once again, but it's still the same kind of thing. You have oppressive forces, a.k.a. bullies, who come in, and these are your people, like in Superman's world, it would be people like, say, Zod or Lex Luthor, or anybody who wants to do harm to him or others. Superman is basically the person who is rising up in defense of the people who are getting picked on. In his case, I don't know if he's exactly the one being picked on. I mean, in some cases, that could be the case. But more in this case, he's the person who takes on the bullies to defend the ones who are being victimized. But either way, he has a strong moral center which guides that. And but once again, it's a similar kind of story. It's another allegorical kind of story about where you have bullies and the victims who rise up against them. It's just the entire theme of this episode, in my opinion, how comic books can be an allegory of bully versus victim and vice versa, but I think that resonates really with a lot of people.
that I think is a timeless kind of theme. You know, because the fact of the matter is that no matter how many years go by, I'm not trying to be gloom and doom here. I do think that, there will be a time when the vast majority of people will be able to learn to live with each other, learn to coincide, and learn to be decent with each other. But one of the things that's never going to change, and this is always true, because no matter what, remember, there are billions of people in the world, okay? So the chances are always going to be high that there's always going to be somebody who's just going to hate you just because you exist, who's going to oppress you, who's going to make you feel bad, who's going to do everything they can to destroy you and everything you represent. Just because they do not like everything everything about you, you know, your existence offends them, sadly. So that's why I say this is kind of a timeless theme. I don't think comic books, and I'm not just talking superheroes, just comic books in general, whether they be horror comic books, superhero comic books, action adventure comic books, science fiction comic books, any kind of comic book you can think of, even manga. The fact of the matter is that I think that this will always be something that is always going to be a relevant topic, simply because of the fact that there will always be ugly people out there willing to make a situation bad for you. And then there will always be people who will rise up against them. It's just something that I think applies to real life. And the fact of the matter is that art imitates life. And it always will. This is another reason why comic books are so important to me, and I think important to the people who do read them. Comic books have risen and fallen, over many years. Sometimes they're more popular than others, other times not. There was a point in the early 50s when comic books were selling by the hordes. And then come Comics Code Authority, comic book sales just got gutted. But then in the late 60s, early 70s, they started to pick up again. They started to fall again in the early 80s, but then picked up again by the late 80s and really into the early 90s. Like, there was this large gap of when comic books were just getting really popular. Then they smashed down again in the mid-90s. It's just been up and down. And then there was even a period, when the, Marvel movies were becoming popular in the late aughts to the 2010s when the sales were breaking up again, but then they kind of fell again. It's an up and down industry. But no matter what, no matter who's reading it, over the years, there will always be people who are reading comic books who need these kind of stories. And like as I said, so as long as there are horrible, ugly, and I will use the term evil, as long as there are horrible, ugly, and evil people out there, there are always going to be people who will rise up against them. And this is one of the reasons why we have so many great comic book stories, because they represent these. And like I said, yes, this is very apparent in the superhero form, but you can see it in other ones too. Just as like I mentioned with the EC comics. These were horror stories. None of them had superheroes in it. But the great thing about it was, once again, you'd have these horrible people doing these horrible things, and you wanted bad things to happen to them, and when the bad thing finally happened to them, you were happy because, you know, in the end, the villain got their just desserts. But it even happens with action-adventure stories, with anything else. I mean, you know, you have, one of my favorite stories, and I've talked about it many, 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 many times. They have animes of it, there are books of it. They even have a comic book now, and it's Vampire Hunter D, and it even comes in manga form as well. Vampire Hunter D, but that has a lot of it in it as well. You have these nobles, aka vampires, who are horribly oppressing the people, and are just treating people like livestock. D comes in as a champion of the oppressed, and actually helps people out, and actually asks for no reward. In fact, most of the time he gets just as ostracized as the vampires that he hunts. He is very much alone in the world, but he doesn't do it for the accolades. He doesn't do it, so he can get a pat on the back. He does it because it's the right thing to do, and this is the same thing with it. So this is what I'm saying, you know, it's not just prevalent in, superhero comic books. It's prevalent in just really almost all forms of literature. Very, very much in comic books, but you can even, but they even have that in novels too, prose novels. But if I went on that, I mean, if I went and sit here and talked about prose novels the entire, that would be a whole different episode. That might be several episodes. So we're not going to go there, but we're strictly dealing with comic books this episode. But my point is, regardless of genre, that is a reoccurring theme, is the whole, you have the whole oppressive force, aka your bullies, or your villains, or whatever you want to call them, your evil beings, and then you have your heroes, your victims, your people taking the power back, your people who are basically telling the oppressors, the evil people, the bullies, you basically have your people who are coming back and saying, no, we won't be oppressed by you. We're not going to sit here and let you just take control. Now, that can be an allegory for politics as well, but we're not going to get into that. Unfortunately, that is a very, red button topic. So I will avoid that for, just for the sake of the fact that I don't want any headaches, one thing that most people can agree on is that, is that there is really that allegorical comparison that you can have. It's basically a lot of comic books, you have that you have that bully who basically tries to take things over, make your life miserable, and then the person who rises up against them and basically takes the power back and basically tells them, no, I'm not going to let you bully me anymore. I'm not going to let you pick on me. I'm not going to let you run and ruin my life. And like I said, it's beautiful in so many cases. I'll admit I have my favorite versions of these stories. You know, many of them I've already talked about. Like I said, this is one of the reasons I like so many Spider-Man stories, because it has a lot of that in it, especially. But it also explains why I like a lot of these certain loner characters like Vampire Hunter D, and even characters like Captain Harlock. The fact of the matter is these are people who have decided to take a stand against an oppressive force of some kind. You know, in Captain Harlock, he decides to take a stand against the corrupt figures of Earth, and he also decides to take a stand against oppressive alien forces who've decided to come in and take over humankind. And then you have, as I said, like Vampire Hunter D, he's a character that is a half-human, half-vampire hunter who, and, you know, many people may make the comparison to Blade, but once again, he predates Blade. Blade didn't actually become half-human and half-vampire until the film, which came out in 98. Blade, yes, as a character, predates Vampire Hunter D, but Blade, during his initial run throughout the 70s and into the early 80s, Blade was a human hunter character. He did not become half-vampire until the film in 98. And, so, but no, Vampire D was the first character of his kind at the time. But anyway, I have many episodes where I talked about that, but as I was saying before with, the Vampire D character, D, he helps people out, and fights these vampire lords who basically treat people like cattle, and he does it without even, thought of reward or anything. I mean, yes, technically, he does charge for his services, but it's only because he needs something to live on. You don't get the impression that he does it because he wants to live like some kind of rich big shot. The only reason he asks for the money is because he has to live on it. But other than that, he does what he does because it's the right thing to do. And I love a lot of characters like that. They're among some of my favorite characters. That's why I like characters like D, why I like characters like Captain Harlock. These are characters I can very much relate to. And then in terms of comic books, the funny thing is that there's certain reasons why I like certain other characters. Now, once again, people would think, given who I am, the fact that this is called Gothner Revelations, you would think that Batman would be my favorite character, which actually is not the case. I have nothing against Batman, but actually, hilariously enough, Superman is my favorite character. But there are reasons for this, why I bonded to the character. One, because of the fact that I had watched Superman, the movie, from an early age, and I really liked that. And I'd watch a lot of the old Max Fleischer Superman cartoons. Because the fact of the matter, I didn't see Superman the Animated Series until I was a teenager. I loved it, and it's a great show, and it's one of my favorites, but that didn't come out until I was a teenager. But the fact is my early years would shape me was there was the Superman movies with Christopher Reeve, and then, as I said, there were the old Max Fleischer cartoons, and I love those. Another reason why I end up buying the character a lot, and this also, interesting enough, happened during my teenage years, when I had rewatched it. The fact of the matter is, my father had passed away when I was 14, and he passed away due to a heart attack. Now, you probably understand where this is going, for those of you who have seen Superman the movie. And what had happened was, then that scene just really hit me hard, and it just really hit home. Because, every time, it makes me bawl every time I watch it, but I'm so connected to this thing. And then I connect to the character of Superman in this way. First off, when his father has a heart attack, and, that was painful enough, but then they're at the funeral, and then he just says something which always tears me up every time, and I'm probably going to get a little bit emotional when I say it here, but he says to his mother, all those things I can do, all those powers, and I couldn't even save him. You know, and yeah, see, now I'm getting teary-eyed now. but it was, you know, and it was then and there that I really, really, really bonded with the character of Superman. And, you know, so the fact of the matter is, and that was another thing, you know, and like I said, you know, I like his moral center. I like the fact that no matter how different things become, no matter how bad even, say, the world tends to become, Superman, throughout the years, you know, sticks to his virtuous ways, sticks to his morality. That's something I really do enjoy. And like I said, so and that's what I said, and that's what I love about comic books in general, is there really is, throughout all of comic books, regardless of whether it's superheroes or any other genre, you know, and my favorite being horror, but you always have that. You basically have the you basically have the villains getting their just desserts by usually by the hands of people who are basically saying, we're not going to take it anymore. You know, it's great to see the villains get their just desserts, but you know, your mileage may vary. Either way, I think personally that that is a timeless kind of story that that anybody of any generation can relate to. But anyhow, it's about time that I got to my novel and comic book recommendations. So let's get to that. Now, as far as my novel recommendations go, you know, getting on that, I guess, kind of hero versus oppressive force thing. You know, I did mention, you know, the story of Perseus. You know, there are many books on this. So to tell you the truth, you find any kind of book, and it is great. But if you look at it, there is a book, and I believe it's called the Illustrated Book of Greek Myths and Legends. And this one actually has a lot of great illustrations in it. Goes a lot through Greek history. And it's got a lot of really great heroic stories like that. So I personally would highly recommend that, especially for those illustrations, because those illustrations are really great. It's another reason that it helped get me into comic books. But I think it's called the Illustrated Book of Greek Gods and Myths, I think. You know, and I'm probably going to lead you off in the wrong direction, be like, hey, Jared, you gave me the wrong suggestion. How dare you? But I'm pretty sure if you do a Google search on it, or even search it on Amazon, you can find something like that. But they have a lot of really great illustrated books on this. But either way, the stories themselves are also really great. As I said, got a lot of allegory in them. You know, you got the story of Hercules, Perseus, Achilles, you know, and, you know, even, you know, what is it? David and the Argonauts. You know, so, you know, just check these all out. They're actually very good. Like I said, especially the illustrated version, because it's got a lot of great, just a lot of great art in it. Anyhow, for my comic book recommendation, and hey, there are a lot of books that have, as I said, these allegorical things like that. So I have a wide variety of comic books to pick from on this particular subject. But, you know, seeing as how there are so many,
I'll probably just pick my favorite story when it comes to, say, basically, victims rising up against their bullies. And really, when it comes to that, I'd really have to say that the X-Men actually covers this really, 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 really well. And in fact, doing that kind of thing, the story I would actually like to recommend. Now, granted, technically, this is not really, it's a love story in it, and it's also got, Japanese Yakuza and whatnot, but it's just a really, really great story, and it's still got that same kind of, villain hero thing, and I'm talking about the Wolverine miniseries done by Frank Miller and Chris Claremont. And it's a really great story. Wolverine goes to Japan to marry his girlfriend Mariko, but her father does not like him because he's, considered Gaijin or a foreign devil. And anyway, he basically forbids her from marrying him. Because this guy's in charge of the Yakuza, he basically sicks his ninja on him. And anyway, Wolverine has to fight his way through them. It actually leads into a crossover with the X-Men title. And what you find out is that, once again, spoilers for people who haven't read it, but this comic book's been out for years and years and years and years, so, it's kind of okay to spoil it by now. But anyway, it leads into an X-Men title where basically you find out that the Silver Samurai is actually the son of this guy. Because what happens is, in the end, Wolverine's actually able to kill him, and then, Wolverine and Mariko are going to get married. But then what happens is, Silver Samurai has this psychic lady who he has with him, who ends up manipulating Mariko's mind. And Mariko calls off the wedding, says it's never going to work out, and then breaks it off with Wolverine, and he just kind of goes back to live with the X-Men again. Because she's being manipulated by her brother, the Silver Samurai. Even though that kind of ends sadly, no, it's really cool Wolverine, fighting the Yakuza and these ninja clans in order to save the woman he loves. But like I said, still, it's the classic oppressed oppressor kind of storyline, and then the person who just can't take anymore, who rises up against these things. One of my favorite stories in that regard, so definitely check that out, the Wolverine miniseries by Chris Claremont and Frank Miller. You can either get it separately as one story, or they have it collected in, they actually have it collected in the, some of the, Uncanny, X-Men, omnibuses. In fact, I think it's collected in volume 3. Yes, it's collected in volume 3 of the Uncanny X-Men omnibus. So definitely check that out. Either way, it's about time I wrap this whole thing up. I want to thank you all for listening. Definitely appreciate each and every one of you who listens to the show and gets something out of it. I'm glad that I have you all here. And once again, thank you. Thank you so much. And hey, with that all being said, I hope you all have a wonderful evening. And I'll see you all again in the next episode.